This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. We're all aware of how bitter things can get when a divorce goes awry, but how much does divorce mediation and family mediation really help? Here to walk us through the reality of family mediation and what to expect if you give it a try is Lim Siew Sim. She's a family mediator. Welcome to the show, Sim.
Hello.
You know, I had no idea family mediators actually existed. I mean, who are you? How would you describe yourself?
It's a very new profession, certainly because this form of dispute resolution is very new, at least in this part of the world. It's already been practiced widely in the States as well as in Australia, and in a different form even in China, in Japan. But here in Malaysia, it's still seen as out-of-court settlement negotiations. Certainly, that's in the end, that's the end result. But mediation is a little bit more than just negotiation. My job is to help families communicate. In divorce specifically, is to help the husband and the wife communicate. Oftentimes when they come to me, it's probably the first time in a long time they've actually sat down in the same room together at the table, you know. So my job really is not just to get them to settlement, but also to help them communicate with each other so that they can get to agreeing to the terms and conditions of their separation.
What does it take to be a family mediator? I mean, I can imagine it must be terribly mentally and physically draining to do this.
I get asked that all the time, actually.
Yeah, and you know, beyond your scope of the legal work, I think a lot is expected out of you in terms of psychology, the ability to, as I said, mediate, damage control, that kind of thing. How do you manage all of that?
I think you do it just like any other job. Obviously, I have a great interest in this particular field and certainly in alternative dispute resolution because for me, philosophically, it's something that I feel should be considered, especially for families, not to go to court, not to have to say those things that you are forced to say about each other. In Malaysia, because there's really no such there's no such thing as a no-fault divorce. So unless you both agree to the divorce, you have to allege certain things about each other to show that the other person is at fault and therefore that the marriage has broken down.
How does this actually work? When people come to you, in what circumstance should I come to you? Is it only when
most people come to me and say, "I need a divorce lawyer"? I'd say 90% of my clients, well, especially in the beginning, they'd say, "We need a divorce lawyer." And I'd say, "Well, we don't litigate divorces at my firm anyway. What we do is we help parties come to an agreement without having to go to court so that they can then file a joint petition of divorce with all the terms and conditions already agreed between both parties, and so they don't have to fight in court." That really is the gist of it.
Would you say it's been quite successful?
It has been quite successful, I'd say, because most of the people who come to me, they've already been fighting for years, and they've already got lawyers on board, or they might be families who've decided that they just don't want to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they want it over quickly, and they want it over, especially for the children to be able to get on with, you know, adjusting with this different life.
Right. What's the process like?
So they often come to me separately and say, "Well, I want to do this, but I'm not sure the other person wants to." And so I say, "Well, you know, come and have a chat. Come and talk to me and see if this process is right for you." Because it's voluntary, unlike in some other countries where mediation is mandatory before you even allow to take your divorce to court, in Malaysia it's voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to me, we have a chat, I understand what it is their dispute is about, what are the issues, what are the dynamics between the people, and once we have all the paperwork done, you know, there is an agreement to mediate where they understand what it is that mediation is about, what it is that my job is in helping them. We come together at a date that we fix that's mutually agreeable between the three of us. And we sit down and we talk about it in quite a structured, organized way. So we might start with talking about the children. And, I don't like using labels with the children. People, families are very concerned about who gets custody, who has children, who has the children live with them. We talk first about what their living arrangements are, their current living arrangements are. Then we talk straight away about what's best for the kids. You know, it's important to know what the parents want and what the parents need. But at the end of the day, we still have to come to some kind of agreement as to what's best, who can spend more time with them, who can look after them. If one travels extensively, if one doesn't have the resources, you know, let's look at what is universally considered fair and reasonable.
How easy is it to come to a consensus?
It's only easy once both parties feel that they've been heard. When they feel that the other person understands what it is that they're going through and what it is that they want to say, then somehow that consensus still come. Oh, the other person understands. Or at least somebody in the room understands.
Mm-hmm. You know, after all this mediation, sometimes people flip-flop when it comes to decisions. I mean, either they're influenced by, you know, external factors, grandmas, grandpas, neighbors, aunties, uncles, you know. How do you manage that?
It'll always be there. You know, I've had a mediation session where both parties agree and we set another date to talk about different disputes. Mm-hmm. And at the subsequent date, one person will come and say, well, you know, I'm not getting a fair deal. My grandma says that I should ask for this and my mother says I should ask for that and this is not fair and this is not reasonable. And sometimes it just helps to take them back again to what we discussed, because when we discuss their disputes, we don't necessarily talk about the mechanics of how things should be done. We look at their interests. Well, you want this. Why is it that you want this? What's important to you? When it comes to the children, for example, why do you want your child to live with you every day? And why is it, or if you're not the custodial parent, why is it that you want to visit on these specific days? And oftentimes the answer is simple, but they don't articulate mm-hmm. it in a way that the other person can understand.
Right.
The answer might be, I want to have a relationship with my children. I don't want to be just a visiting parent. I want to be involved in their everyday lives.
Right. How much does ego and pride play in all of this?
It's always there. You know, all of us have ego and all of us have pride. But with mediation, we're hoping that we can help parents put that aside for a little while. You know, of course their needs are important. Parents' needs are important. Parents' rights are important. But we'd like to talk about the children first. Because if we can get through that, if we can say, look, we're a team, we might not be husband and wife anymore. Mm-hmm. But we will always be parents to these children. Let's work as a team. Let's look at it not so much as who wins and who loses, but how we're going to work as a team for the children.
How confidential is this mediation process?
It's confidential in that before we go into mediation, we sign an agreement that prohibits any of the information that's disclosed in mediation to be used. So that means documents. That also means statements made in mediation. Mm-hmm. And therefore, once they sign this agreement, it means that it cannot be used outside. If these settlement negotiations fail and an agreement isn't reached, then you can't use any of that information outside of the mediation room. So
right.
Really, it is very, very private. It is confidential in the sense that it remains between three of us. Whereas in court, it's very different. You've mm-hmm. got a public gallery. It's very, very public.
Of course. What if one person is not open to mediation? Does that mean, you know, that's the end of the road, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So it cannot work if one person isn't there.
Yes.
Okay. Is the cost of mediation higher than the cost of going through to court?
No. If you're talking about court, and if it is a highly contentious divorce where both sides will need to get their own lawyers, and then they would have to go to a full trial, which means, you know, calling your own witnesses, examining those witnesses, We're really looking at a substantial cost savings if you don't have to do that, of at least 50%, if not up to 70-80%.
Okay. Does that mean that if a mediation agreement is reached upon, there is no need to go to court at all?
In a sense, yes, because you wouldn't have to talk about your dispute and fight over things in court. There would be nothing like that. What really happens is once you have a settlement agreement after mediation, that is a legally enforceable contract.
It's a binding agreement.
Yes, okay. And you can go and enforce it in court if you like. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you are no longer married. So you still need a judge to pronounce that you are no longer married in court. And that means then that once you have that agreement, you still need to file a joint petition for divorce into court. The judge will look at it, make sure that everything's in order, make sure that the wife and the children are taken care of, and then the judge will pronounce the divorce. So in that sense, you'd still have to go to court, but it's a consensual joint petition. So you don't have to, put anything forward or fight over anything. There's nothing in dispute anymore.
Makes it a lot easier, mm-hmm. isn't it? So does that mean yourself, Sim, as the family mediator, actually takes this to court on the, for them and carries it through?
I give the parties the choice. Either they take the settlement agreement and then they go to their own lawyers to file a joint petition for them, or they can do it through my firm. Most of the time they elect to do it through my firm because it's neutral, mm-hmm. as opposed to, one or the other.
When we come back, we'll find out more about family mediation on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi, Lim Siew Sim, she's a family mediator. We're discussing the reality of divorce mediation. Now, Sim, how long does the whole process of divorce take through a mediator?
It really depends. One session is normally about 3 hours long. And generally speaking, if it's not a high conflict dispute that we're talking about, in that perhaps there are no children or there's no property and it's just, maintenance or something like that, we can do it in one session. Sometimes when conflict is really high and the parties perhaps have been in dispute for many years, it can take maybe 3 to 5 sessions. So it really, really depends.
But much shorter than the normal court process, would you say?
Of course, yeah. Of course.
Just getting a date with the courts is a chore, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that can be a pretty draggy process. Yeah. Who's qualified to act as a mediator? Can any solicitor be a mediator?
Actually, anybody can be a mediator. You don't have to be a lawyer to become a mediator, but you must be accredited by the, in Malaysia, the Malaysian Mediation Center. They run their own courses and you get accredited after, I think when I did it, it was 45 hours. It's a 45-hour course.
So you were trained here?
Yeah.
Okay, but you got your exposure to the whole idea of marriage or family mediation when you were abroad.
Yes.
Or where were you based again when you sort of came across this and thought that this was some area of interest?
Well, I'd been abroad for many years, working mostly in-house. And when I came back to Malaysia and decided that, I'd like to go into practice again, the managing partner of the firm that I work with now decided that, there must be a different way of doing things, especially with families. There must be a way of resolving their disputes that makes a little bit more sense than doing the usual adversarial work in court, because these are families. These are not shares or companies, or these are people with children, and the decisions that they make and the results of their dispute will affect them for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Do we have many family mediators in the country?
We have many mediators in the country, unfortunately, because mediation isn't quite a profession like it is in other countries. We don't have that many family mediators.
Okay. We also have the Sharia courts where, Muslims go to get divorced and things like that. Would you have the expertise to mediate for Muslim couples as well?
No, I know that there is the Sharia mediation, and I've heard from people who are directly involved that it's been working very, very well and that the rate of settlement is very, very high. But apart from that, you need to be you know, Sharia qualified, and I do believe that the Sharia judges themselves, I'm not certain about that, but I think it's the Sharia judges themselves who mediate the disputes in the Sharia court.
Okay.
Doesn't sound like the best idea, but well, that's the case. So you don't get involved in that?
No, okay. not with the Sharia cases.
What's the most common reason for divorce in your practice?
In my experience, it would be disconnect. When the parties no longer connect on a personal or emotional level, and the process can take years, and so you know, abuse or infidelity is just a symptom of that disconnect.
Okay, right. Usually, the root cause of it is disconnect.
Mm.
What's the biggest challenge for couples when you know they're going through a mediator like yourself?
I think the biggest challenge at the very beginning is to trust the mediator, to feel safe enough to be able to speak about things, because they do want to speak about things, but when we're finally in that room, they talk to me. In the beginning, they don't talk to each other; they talk to me, and it's amazing, Mira, when they're able to speak, probably for the first time, in front of their partner, about the things that are troubling them, the things that are causing them pain, and to see the dynamic change. They may not necessarily agree with each other, but that understanding of what that other person is going through oftentimes changes the negotiation, changes the attitudes, and changes the dynamics.
Have couples changed their minds about divorce after coming to see you?
I'd like to say yes, but by the time they come to me, it's pretty much over. They're pretty much determined to go their separate ways. I did have one case where they did reconcile, simply because they found a new way of communicating with each other. And that's a bonus for me.
Of course, it certainly is. From a personal point of view, I mean, you're... you're advising strangers about how they should actually split up their personal affairs, how to, you know, you help them decide on the custody of the children. I mean, you're literally going straight into their personal lives. From a personal point of view, how do you do this?
Well, I don't advise them, actually. I help them to communicate what it is that's important to them and what it is that's that they want out of this, but I don't advise them and I don't make any decisions for them. What happens is that it's their process, so they control the process. They decide on the scope of they decide on the agenda. I take them through it in as structured a way as I can, but I don't advise them, and it's their process.
There might be this common feeling that one party is winning and the other party is losing in a divorce. How do you combat that?
I think with the court system, there'll always be a party that wins and a party that loses. But if you don't have to go to court and you can get what you want without having to go to court, then really I know it sounds cliched, but it is win-win. But most people will not come and negotiate a settlement unless they feel that they can get a better deal in settlement negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get that deal, then both sides win.
What's the hardest part for you of being a mediator?
The hardest part is to be able to see... because you can step back, because you can look at them and to be able to see how much the children suffer when their parents are at war. And because as a mediator, you cannot say, look, don't do this and don't do that and you should do this. You can't. It's their process and you just have to help them through it. It's difficult sometimes in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's more easy than it is difficult. Because at the end of the day, you do feel that you're helping them. Even if they don't settle, you feel that at least you've helped them see each other.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever bring in the children at any stage just to speak to them and to find out how they feel about the whole thing.
I haven't. I know some mediators do that, but I haven't, because at the end of the day, it's still their parents' decision as to how they're going to proceed, you know. So I don't.
When couples come to you, is it most often that they're mutually agreeable to a divorce, or is it usually one-sided?
There's always a person who initiates, and then the other person would have to either accept or perhaps that person will take a little bit longer. But at the end of the day, it really isn't about whether the person wants a divorce or not. It's how they want to go forward in all of this. And that really is the difference between going to court and mediating your dispute. Because in court, it will be focused on what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, fact-finding, you know, what happened, who said what to whom, fault-finding, who did what to whom. You know, in mediation, yes, what happened in the past might be important to understand mm-hmm. the dynamics between the two people. But at the end of the day, the focus is on the future.
Exactly. Yeah, it should be for any relationship, really. Mm. It's always easiest to dwell in the past, isn't it? And never, as a result, you never move forward at all. Mm. And this is even couples who are not even, you know, seeking a divorce, really. How many of them actually have their children's interests in mind?
They both do. At the end of the day, they both do. But because of the level of conflict and all the things that have transpired between the both of them, what they believe is in the interests of the children may not necessarily be in the interests of the children.
Yeah.
But there's so much emotions involved. There's so much pain involved, so much resentment. And having to go through, for example, a court case where you have to allege these things against each other, either by affidavit or, you know, in testimony, it just opens up more wounds. And so mediation, really, we're just trying to stop that cycle of conflict and help them just sit down and say, let's just not allege things anymore. Let's just see what you want.
Mm-hmm. Do couples often underestimate the impact of divorce and what it can have on children? After
yes.
a while, it becomes very... It's about me.
Mm.
You know, forget the rest of the world. It's about me.
It's you know, these people are going through a very hard time. I've heard the expression where, except for the death of a spouse, divorce is the most stress-inducing experience that you'll ever experience in your life. And so you might not be thinking in the same way that you would, rationally or, you know... And so when we're talking about the children here, the children look at their parents and they think, well, I don't want to escalate the fight, so I'll just make like nothing's wrong. I don't want to upset mom and dad. I don't want to have to, you know, take sides, but I might have to because I think that's what mom wants to hear. When I get off the phone with dad and mom gets all silent, I'm maybe she'll feel better if I say, oh, dad was not nice, or I don't want to be with dad. So, you know, oftentimes the kids portray whatever it is that they think parents want to see and hear. And so in that sense, you know, parents might not necessarily understand the full impact of the separation on their kids.
How does mediation during a divorce sort of help protect the rights of and interests of the child?
Well, by putting the children's interests first as a priority, we're really making parents look at their children's needs first, actually, before their own. And in that sense, you know, when you go to court, you really look at children at problems defined by the law as what's prohibited by the law. But when we talk together about their children, about their families, they know their families best, not some judge. They know their own families best. And so defining what it is that's best for their families is up to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Earlier on, you spoke about the mediation process, and you, as you said, you normally start off with the children. After which, what do you go on to discuss?
Property, mm-hmm. division, and after that, maintenance, spousal support. Those are the three main areas that will have to go into any divorce petition. To basically settle the terms and conditions of any separation. because when you divorce, you're no longer one, you're two separate entities, and therefore, you know, you have to then separate everything, and in a sense, they're going to go forward in their lives as two separate people, two separate households. Unfortunately, they still have to share the children.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you ever hit a roadblock with mediation?
Yes, that's called an impasse in mediation, where with all the different techniques and with all the different ways in which we're trying to help couples communicate, they're still not getting there. And in that sense, the mediator then has to decide whether mediation can still come through, whether you've got to change tactics and change techniques, or whether you're going to have to call it, bring it to a close.
Mm-hmm. Sims, so this sounds mentally draining for you. Just listening to you, I'm thinking, how many cases do you see in a day?
I don't see more than one in a day, because...
It takes up a lot of your time, isn't it?
It takes up time. It's not just the sessions itself. It's the preparation, and it's the consolidation of information and putting it on in different PowerPoint slides, making them see, especially when it comes to numbers and money and budgeting, you know, if they can see everything on one piece of paper and see how it flows and how things are divided, then, you know, it becomes easier to understand. A lot of times, people haven't budgeted their mm-hmm. households when they come to me, and when I show them the tools that we have and the presentation that the kind of presentation that we do for them, they're pretty amazed.
Mm-hmm. Hence, the reason why premarital counseling guidance really, really helps, isn't it? And that, I think, finances is one area most couples don't think about.
Yes.
When they get into a relationship or decide to actually get married. On the website of the organization that you work with, there is a mention about how empowerment, mediation is empowering. It's a benefit for the couples. Could you just elaborate a little how empowerment comes into play?
Well, because it's their process. Number one, it's voluntary. So they're there because they want to be there. Number two, it's their process. They define the scope of the dispute and what they're going to be talking about. And they have control over how the outcome of the dispute. If they left it to a judge, the judge is going to decide what's fair and what's reasonable. Mm-hmm. The judge is going to decide how much who pays to whom. The judge is going to decide how much time the child spends with which parent. It's completely out of their control. In mediation, you still have that control. You can still decide. You can still agree on how you want things done in the future. And in that way, that's empowering for both people as families. You know, the other way in which I think women are empowered is that for the first time, they're in charge of the finances in a way perhaps that they've never been in charge of before. They know how much they need to survive from day to day, from month to month, and they know how much they need to have a comfortable life, you know. And I think I'd say 80% of the women who come to see me before mediation don't actually know how much exactly, when it comes down to the bottom line, they need on a month-to-month basis.
That's very interesting to know. I mean, I'm just amazed that, you know, we've got so many women in the workforce now, and 80% is a very high number, really.
They know roughly.
Yeah.
Well, I earn this much, and, you know, but this much is left at the end of the month, so I must be spending that much. So they know roughly, but when you ask them, well, you know, if you're going to be living on your own mm-hmm. moving forward, they don't. Yeah.
What should couples avoid during a divorce, Sim?
I think they should avoid going to court above all else. It doesn't make sense.
Your message on the reality of family mediation.
The reality is that you still have a say. When you sit down and talk to each other, you still have a say. And this is your chance to have your say. If you leave it to the judge, you have no say.
Thank you very much for joining me today. family mediator Lim Siew Sim on the realities of family mediation on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.